I did not develop this material at all for a seminar. That never crossed my mind. The material that you and I are going to be sharing in this little simple book is stuff that became very important in my own life. Unfortunately, I grew up in a home that suffered divorce. My father left when I was 5 years old. That had a tremendous impact upon my life. A lot of scars, and I think I'm only getting over some of the scars right now. I'm 43 right now. But I'm getting over those. But it had a lot of impact. I just didn't know what it was to be a man. I grew up, and I happened to grow up in Highland Park over here, and then came out to Arlington later on. I started my own business and was very successful in business, as a matter of fact, and sold that later on to Henry S. Miller Company in downtown Dallas. But when I was successful, when I had the money and the cars and the house and the wife and the kids and on and on and on, there was a little voice inside of me that kept on saying, you know what? If anybody got to know you, they wouldn't like you very much. You're not very much. I think it's called a little voice of inadequacy, and I'm pretty sure a lot of fellows in here have the same voice. But it was really scary to me, and so what I had to do with my life, I just had to keep people away. I had to do the best I could in business, had to succeed the best that I could, and just try and do what I could to make it, and then try and keep people at a distance so they wouldn't get to know me. It's a pretty miserable way to live, and I think a lot of folks live that way. Now, I had a life-changing experience when I was about 30 years old. And after the next, or during the next 2 years, I began to see little bits and pieces about what it took to become a real man. I ran across these in the Bible. I came across speakers, read books, and then I met models, too, of men that were very impressive to me. But I'll tell you, I was a little bit more than just kind of interested in these things. I was desperate. I wanted to become a real man, more than anything that I could imagine. And so whenever I saw a little bit or a principle or something like that, I'd fasten onto that thing. And I'd try to learn it and try and apply it in my life. But after about 2 years, an unusual thing happened. One night I was sleeping, and about 3 o'clock, I woke up and I had an outline in my mind. I think in outlines. It's an odd way to think, but anyway, it's the way I think. So I had an outline in my mind, and I got up, because I have a policy also. If you think of something at night, just get up and write it down so you can go back to sleep. So I got up and wrote the outline out real quick, and then went back to sleep. Didn't think too much of it. I got up the next morning, went to see what I'd written down the night before, and looked at it, and tinkered with this little thing, move this here and this there. And then all of a sudden, I look at that, and I got excited. Because I looked at that outline and said, hey, that's a step-by-step plan for becoming a quality man. If I just apply that thing, I can become the man I've always wanted to become. I got real excited. And I began to apply it. And it began to make a difference in my life. A couple of years later, some other man came and said, hey, look, something seems to be going on all right in your life. You're certainly not perfect. I haven't anybody accused me of being perfect yet. But I said, you're getting better, you know. What's the deal? Have you learned something? I said, well, yeah, I got some principles. And I said, could you share them with us? And so I began to share them with little groups of around 20 men or so. And that was about 10 or 12 years ago, something like that. Since then, I've been applying these principles in my own life, and they've been very, very important to me, and I've been applying them with men. And that's all I want to do, is just share with you the principles that I've learned. They've been very, very valuable in my life, and I'm hoping they're going to be the same way in your own. I saw this especially, how valuable they were, just a few years ago, a couple of years ago, as a matter of fact, when an unusual thing happened for me. I failed. Well, that's not so unusual, but I failed big. About 2 years ago, I failed really big in a project I've been working on for about 6 years. And I mean, it all fell apart. Publicly, everybody could see it. I mean, it was kind of embarrassing. Anybody ever had a situation like that? Or if something just all fell apart publicly, it's embarrassing. And I mean, everybody could see. There was no hiding it and everything. And the pieces of my project were all around me. Well, it's amazing to me because one day I looked at my wife and said, wife? And she said, yeah. She said, I said, you know what? I've really failed. And she said, well, you know, I've noticed that. And but I said, you know what? She said, what? I said, but I'm not a failure. I failed, but I'm not a failure. I don't know if that makes any difference to you, but it made a big difference to me. It was the first time that I realized that I had value, just plain had value. Whether I succeeded or failed, I was becoming the man that I wanted to become. That's been very, very important to me. And so I hope that the principles will be valuable in your own life. Let's go ahead and look at a couple of things. First of all, I want to, if you look in the inside the back cover, just want to mention something to you. This course is extremely simple. It's almost embarrassingly simple in some ways. There's only 5 major verses. Now, that's not very hard. If you didn't learn these 5 verses, what they are and what they mean, you'll have the entire course in the palm of your hand. 9.5 hours we're going to be together for 5 verses. Now, we'll look at them a lot of different ways. But I want you to see it's real simple. I mean, it's not going to be complicated, and there they are right there. We get a couple of them out of the way tonight, so that's real easy. Also, let's look in the inside of the front cover. On this page right here. And let me mention something else that happens to be very, very important to me. And that is that I am not going to be teaching you something. I'm so thankful. And that is I will not be teaching you any rules. Now, there is a place for rules in life, but I'm real pleased I don't have to teach them to you. Rules are inflexible standards. They don't change, and everybody has to keep them the same way. There's no bending, and there's a place for rules, and God uses rules. But I'm glad He doesn't make me teach them, and I'm not going to teach you one rule whatsoever. During the entire time we're going to be together, I'll not teach you one rule. What I'm going to be teaching you are principles. Principles are quite a bit different. Principles are forces that are operating in this universe. God has created them, and you and I can either agree with the principles, or frankly, we can defy them. No problem. But we can't get rid of them. That's the deal. They're there. They're operating, and we cannot get rid of them, and there's going to be consequences from them. They're very, very predictable. Let me show you one principle. If I took this pen and held it up in my hands and all of a sudden took my fingers away from the pen, what would happen to the pen? It would fall because it's a principle called gravity, right? All right, let's say I decide I don't want it to fall. Let's say I hold the pen up there, and I look at it and say, look, pen, when I take my fingers away, you stay right there. You stay in the air. Do not fall. You stay right there. Float in the air when I take my hands away from you. Now, let's say I did a real good job. I really put a number on that pen. Did a really fantastic job. Now, when I took my hands away, what would happen to the pen? It would fall, because there's a principle called gravity. That's what I'm talking about. There are principles operating in this universe. You and I can do anything we want to get away with, try and break them if we want to, but you can't get rid of them. They're there and they're operating, and that's what you and I are going to be looking at. Let me give you an idea of how that works out. How many of you, when you were a kid, ever thought about flying? I don't mean in an airplane, I mean with your arms. Let's have a show of hands, gentlemen. Oh, Carrie, we have an interesting group here. Okay, you thought, maybe if I got some cardboard on there and tied it on and held my arms out, I could go off the barn or the house, you know. Did anybody try it? Oh, this is going to be a difficult group. What'd you go off of? What's that?
I dreamt all the time that I was flying.
Okay, you dreamed.
I got off the ground about 6 feet or 10 feet, and I really fly.
Excellent.
And I felt good, but then when I woke up, I'm back again in the same,
This guy dreamed, and that was a lot better. You were wise. Is there anybody who tried it out and experienced? Did anybody try flying? You did. What did you go off of? The top of your house. How did it go? Not too well. Right. Because there's a principle of gravity, and you know, your parents told you, I mean, son, don't try. Most boys don't try, but if you do, but son, there's a principle called gravity that's going to, you know, bring you right down to the ground. A few try it. Now, a few kids get up a little bit older and they start going to movies sometimes, and they go to a war movie and they see a parachute and they think, hey, that's the deal. Did anybody graduate to a parachute? Oh, an excellent group. Did anybody try a parachute? I know you dreamed it, right?
No.
No, you didn't. Did you try it?
Special forces.
That's the easy way to do it. Did anybody try it with a sheet? Oh, no. How'd it go? What did you go off of?
Side of a house.
Side of a house. How did it go?
Straight down.
Okay. That's what we're talking about. There's principles. I mean, you can decide, you can dream and all you want to, but it doesn't matter. You're not going to change it. They're going to be there. Now, we live in a modern society, and our modern society says, hey, look, man, I don't need to hear about those principles. We live in a modern society, technological society. We're not bothered by those traditional things anymore. We can do whatever we want and get away with it. That's what our society says. The best illustration I could imagine of that would be a hang glider today. A guy could say, hey, gravity, you give me a hang glider, let me get up on the mountain, and I can actually take off, and I can soar, I can go up, I can glide. I'm not bothered by that. Well, I'm impressed, as a matter of fact. However, I'm also pretty sure that I can predict, no matter where a hang glider has gone, I'm pretty sure I can predict what has happened with 100% of the hang gliders that have taken off. What has happened with them sooner or later someplace? Somewhere they've come down in some fashion, well or poorly. Because there's a principle called gravity. You can't beat it. You can defy it for a while and seem like you're getting away with it. But it's going to win. I guess the most exciting way that I've ever seen to do that is with the little waist rockets that the Army developed several years ago in the 1950s. Does anybody remember those from the 50s? Okay, not too many of you guys. Yeah, I think we saw them at the Olympics a couple of years ago, but they strapped rockets on the back of soldiers, I remember. And as a boy, I used to watch that on TV. I used to be very impressed. As I recall, it was always Major Smith that was demonstrating them. I was always wondering because the face changed, but the name was always the same. But anyway, they would come in there and they'd say, Major Smith, now you have these waist rockets. He'd say, yes, we do. Do they work, sir? He'd say, oh, no problem. I mean, they're really great. And you believe that they're safe? And oh, yes, very soon all soldiers will be airborne, will be able to move all around. They're really great. Well, that's impressive. Are you willing to demonstrate them to the people here on TV? I'll be happy to do it, no problem. And I remember as a little boy, I was impressed. And they say, okay, let's have him demonstrate it. Everybody, move away from Major Smith. I remember they'd move away, and the camera would zoom in on him. I remember he'd be standing there solid and everything. They say, Major Smith, are you ready to demonstrate those waist rockets? He'd say, oh, I am. They say, all right, ignite. And I remember he'd press that button, bam, he'd take off. and he'd go, vroom, straight up. I remember he always went right over a two-story house and disappeared behind a two-story house. Well, now as a kid, I was impressed. I mean, I was really impressed, you know? I figured they went over that two-story house to display the power of those waste rockets. However, when I got a little bit older and got to be a teenager, I finally figured out why they used the two-story house. I don't know if any of you do know why. But it was that during the 50s, the Army developed how to take off with the waste rockets. You know one thing they never totally developed? They never totally developed how to land them. I mean, splat, on the other side of that two-story house. They lost a lot of Major Smiths, apparently. They had to peel him out, put another guy in there, and, you know, send him on out there. Now, my point is that there are principles that are functioning in this world. You and I can defy them if we want to. We can break them for a while, and it looks like we're getting away with it. No problem. But they're going to win. And what I want you to see is that we can break the principles. However, there will always be very, very predictable consequences. Very predictable consequences. Now, all I'm going to be doing with you is sharing a few principles with you, not a whole lot, as a matter of fact, and then I'm going to be predicting to you what the consequences are. Good consequences if you do the principles, negative consequences if you defy them. And then I'm going to leave on Saturday, and you're on your own. You can do them or not do them as you like. It's no problem to me. But that's all we'll be doing is seeing what the principles are and then also what the consequences are. I want to mention one other thing, too. Our goal is to learn about these principles. However, it's not so easy to follow. It's easy to follow rules because you just got to do what they say. It's not so easy to follow principles because you're going to find out that sometimes to choose a good principle, you must constantly have to simply break another one. It's going to be very interesting. Sometimes good, godly principles come in conflict with one another. Both of them are of God. And sometimes you constantly just have to break one. And someone comes along and say, hey, you're breaking one of God's principles. It's really going to be amazing. In God's plan, that's going to be okay. Because there's going to be a higher one. Also God's principle. And so what you and I are going to be learning is we're going to have to pick which ones are best. Not just right or wrong, but which one is best. And that's going to be a very interesting thing. And that's part of being a man. Okay, with that in mind, let's go ahead and look at the next page. See what it means to be a man. On the next page, page 2, what I'd like to do is look at Adam and Eve. I want to go ahead and find out what it means to be a man. And we can do that by going back and look at the garden. Because I propose that Adam and Eve are prototypes of all men and women. Or the originals, whatever you want to call them. Templates if you're into machining, anything else like that. But basically what I mean is, they are the first man, the first woman. Every man and woman that's been created from them has their characteristics. That's what I mean. They are the originals. All right? So every man and woman that's been descended from them has their characteristics. Also, with that in mind, let me mention something. I don't know you men, and I do not know where you're coming from on the Bible. And really, I don't mind. Let me mention, if you don't have a Bible tonight, that's fine. You have the little Reader's Digest condensed version there, one page, very small. But I'd recommend that you bring your own Bible tomorrow night, all right? Although that page will help you for tomorrow night, too. But let me mention, I don't mind where you're coming from in the Bible. Some of you may believe that this book is a good book, but frankly, it has a lot of errors, and it's not totally relevant in 1986. Well, guess what? If you believe that, I don't mind. That's fine. You can believe that. There's no problem between you and me. There may be a few of you in here who believe that this book is a myth book. And anybody who believes in it is nuts. Well, guess what if you believe that? I don't mind. I used to believe that a few years ago myself, so it's no big deal to me. You and I can still get along. Now, I believe that this book is literally and accurately true. Amen. And that's the way I'm going to be presenting it. But let me mention something to you. I don't think we have to agree to get along. All right? I've told you I'm going to accept you any way that you are. And what I'm going to do is just hope that you accept me the way I am. I don't think we have to agree to get along. All right? So no matter what you believe in this, you and I can still get along. Likewise, on evolution, there may be some of you in here who believe in evolution. Well, guess what? Anybody guess what? I don't mind. I don't know if you can get the pattern yet. I really don't mind what you believe. You can believe anything you want. It doesn't affect me at all. I used to believe in evolution also. So if you believe in evolution, that's fine. That's not going to be a problem between you and me. Now, I don't believe in that anymore. I understand that Adam and Eve were the first man and the first woman created, and that's the way I'll be presenting it. But again, I don't think we have to agree to get along. I think you'd be surprised. I think it's going to make a lot of sense. Okay, with that in mind, then, what we want to do to find out what a man is, we're just going to go back and look at Adam, because every man that's been descended from him has his characteristics. Likewise, let me ask, is there anybody in here who has a woman who you would like to understand? How many guys in here have a woman that you would like to understand? Excellent, excellent. Okay, let's say Let's say you have a particular woman that you want to understand. I have good news for you, really good news. You get that gal in your mind right now, because in just a little bit, over an hour, you are going to understand that particular woman 200% better. Now, I know you don't believe me. I'm not dumb, gentlemen. But if I could pull that off, would that be a good deal?
Yes.
Yeah. Now, I can't guarantee you're going to like her anymore. But I am going to guarantee you're going to understand her 200% better, all right? Now, I was down here one time with a seminar a few months ago, and I mentioned that statement. One guy held up his hand. I said, yes, sir. He said, hey, fella, 200% of nothing is still nothing. So if you know anything about women, I'll be able to help you 200% better. Now, if I could pull that off, would that be a good deal? To help you understand. I mean, all women. That woman, daughters, anything else. And guess what? I'm going to be able to pull it off. Isn't that neat? Do it every week. So we're going to look at that. Let's look at something else, too. I'm going to propose that these two are a prototype of marriage. They're not just living together on the earth at the same time, but they are in a married relationship. And if we want to understand about a marriage and how our marriage is supposed to operate, I'm going to propose that we can go back and look at how they were operating in the garden. And you'll be amazed. It's going to tell us a whole lot of things about how our marriage is supposed to be operating. There's three things that can show us that they definitely were married and not just dwelling together on the earth. One would be that they were told to have a physical relationship, to be fruitful, to multiply, or have children. I don't know of anywhere in Scripture where God tells a man and a woman to come together in a physical relationship outside the relationship of marriage. So that would be one thing that would tell me that they were married. Also, there's a second reason that we can know that they were married, and that is that the marriage ceremony that you and I go through right now is right there when this couple is brought together. We're not going to be looking at it right now. You could look at it later on, but it's in Genesis 2, 21 through 24. Let me just tell it to you quickly. The ceremony that we go through unconsciously. And the picture in Genesis is that, of course, we know that God had Adam be asleep, and he took a rib, and he fashioned that into a woman, right? And then at the right time, what did he do? He brought that woman to the man, Adam. What did the man do? He claimed her, and then what's the last thing he did? He gave her his name. He says she shall be called woman because she was taken from man. Interestingly, the same thing happens on the name with Hebrew. In Hebrew that was written in, the word for man is ish, and the word for woman is isha. It's just an extension of the name for man. All right, that is the marriage ceremony. A little baby girl is born. The daddy is responsible to raise that girl into a full-blown woman. Many daddies don't do that, but they're going to be held accountable for that. Now, on the day of the wedding, who is always brought down the aisle in a marriage ceremony? Who is always brought down the aisle? The woman or the man? It's always the woman, and who always brings her?
Daddy.
It's always the daddy or the father. Where's the man? He's always waiting. When she gets down there, what does he do? He claims her, and then what's the last thing he does? He gives her his name. It's very interesting. Do you see the similarity? Now, people go through the wedding ceremony. You don't have to be American to do it that way, nor do you have to be Christian. That's the way people around this world do a marriage ceremony. I've given this course to people from all over the world, from Japan and Vietnam and Korea and things like this. And I've asked them, is that basically how your marriage is done? Yeah, that's the way we do it. And basically, the reason we do that is because it just feels right. It just seems right to do it that way. And the reason it seems right is because we're just recreating what God has done with the first couple. You understand what I'm saying? It just feels that way. It just feels right. And so it is because this is the way the first marriage couple was brought together. Okay, there's one last reason that we could know that they were in a married relationship, and that is that there is a key verse on marriage that is used right when they are brought together. Is there anybody in here with a New American Standard Version that could read a verse for me? Okay, sir, would you look up Matthew 19:5? Anybody else with a New American Standard Version that could read a verse for me? Gentlemen, right in the back, if you'd please look up Ephesians 5:31. It's in your booklet if you forget. The rest of us, let's look in Genesis 2:24. Also, let me mention why I asked for the New American Standard. I'm not proposing it's the best translation. It just happens to agree with mine. All right, so I'm not saying it's best. There's several good ones. But let's look at 2:24. It says, after this couple is brought together, for this cause a man shall leave his father and his mother and shall cleave to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. Now, over in Matthew, when the Pharisees and Sadducees came to Jesus and were asking him questions about divorce, he said, Master, we want to ask some things about divorce. We want to know your answer. And Jesus said, all right, I'll give you my answer. And he had an unusual answer. You want to read that?
For this cause a man shall leave his father and mother and shall cleave to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh.
Right. Do you all recognize any of those words? Do they sound similar to Genesis?
Yes.
They're an exact quote. Jesus said, you want to know about divorce? All right, I'll give you my answer. He said, I'll tell you about marriage. And he used this particular verse. Now, over in Ephesians, when Paul is writing the greatest passage anywhere on marriage, he uses the following words. Okay, do you recognize any of those words? Sure, it's an exact quote. This verse pops up three times in Scripture. The first time in Genesis is spoken by God. The second time in Matthew is spoken by Jesus. And the third time in Ephesians is spoken by the Apostle Paul. It's very, very crucial. What I want to see in the New Testament, we know it's always talking about marriage. So for our purposes, it also can tell us in Genesis, it's also talking about marriage. This couple was married. All right? That's what I want us to see. But also, this little verse is maybe more important than even that. This happens to be one of those five verses. Isn't that nice? Get it out of the way right away. Get one down fast. I want to look at a couple of things before we go past this. First of all, this verse, this simple little verse, has three action words or verbs. What is the first action word or verb in this particular verse? For this reason, the man shall leave his father and his mother. What's the next action word or verb? It is cleave. Now, we don't use the word cleave in English anymore, or American. A word, a synonym that we would use in its place would be weave. What it means, what the Hebrew word means, is to intertwining like ivy growing together, all right? But I think you would recognize the word weave a lot more. That's what it means. Finally, what's the third action word or verb? It is become one. One, right. To become one. All right. What I want to propose is that these three verbs show us how God wants a marriage to work out. All right? I'm going to be proposing that God's fulfillment is right here in step three. He wants two to become one. That's his goal. However, for that to happen, you must go through step two first. There must be a weaving first. That's what I'm going to be proposing. However, for that to happen, you must go through step one first. There must be a leaving first. That's what I'm proposing, all right? That you have to go for a marriage to work out, you have to go through step one, and then and only then can you go through step two, and then and only then could you ever get to step three. You can't skip a step. That's what I'm going to be proposing, all right? That's another thing, too. One last ground rule. Let me just mention, during the time that I'm going to be with you, I'm going to be proposing things. I'm going to be suggesting things. I'm going to be saying if this is true or if that is true. Well, after a while, you can begin to ask yourself, doesn't this guy believe anything? Doesn't he know anything? Well, I'm going to do this. I believe everything I'm telling you. I've already made up my mind on everything I'm telling you. But I don't demand that you believe it. So I'm going to be offering it to you, and you can take it and chew it on it yourself. So that's why I won't be demanding. I'll just say, hey, here it is. I'm going to propose it to you or suggest it, or if it's true or if that is true. But if you have any questions, I believe it. I've already made my decision years ago. Okay, with that in mind, if this is true, then we can learn something kind of interesting about a verse. If you really have to go through these three steps in order to have a fulfilled marriage. Because, look at that first word and tell me who that is addressed to, specifically and only. It is the male. For this reason, the man shall leave his father and his mother. Who's the second step addressed to, specifically and only? It is the male again. And he shall cleave or weave to his wife. Finally, who is that third step addressed to? Finally, it is both the male and the female, and they shall become one flesh. Well, if I'm right that a marriage has to go in this order for it to work out, then who controls the possibility of a marriage working out? Who is it, gentlemen? It is the male.
Yes.
Let me show you how that works out. If I'm right in what I'm saying, let's say a woman knocks herself out, does everything right to make her marriage work out. I mean, does everything right. If her husband does not cooperate, if this is true right here, what percent chance does she have of enjoying a fulfilled marriage? No. If her husband does not cooperate, what percent chance? Not 33.
Zero.
It is zero. It's not 33 or 25, which it looks like at first. No, she has 0% chance of enjoying a fulfilled marriage. Why? Because if the husband doesn't cooperate, guess what? The process never gets started. Gentlemen, you have the marriage in the palm of your hand. Your marriage. If you are married, you have your marriage in the palm of your hand. You are the key. Isn't that interesting? And you know what? I think it's true. I don't think it's just interesting. I think it's true. Now, can you begin to see why maybe we need to have ministries to men? Gentlemen, you and I are the key. It's really neat. Really exciting. Tomorrow night, we're going to find out some really neat things about how to help this marriage work out. Yes. Let's go to the next page then. I'd like to begin to actually find out what it means to be a man or a woman. What I want to propose right now is that there is one key word. If you know what this word is, what it is, and what it means, then you will understand women 200% better. How about that? Now it's getting down to one word. One word, seriously. If you know this one word, what it is and what it means, you'll understand all women 200% better.
Love.
Love. Excellent. No. Okay. You'll understand if you are married. You'll understand your wife. If you have daughters, you'll understand daughters. If you have a mother or if you have fellow workers at work, you'll understand women. Now, if that was true, would that be a good deal? I mean, if one word could help you understand women 200% better, how many would agree that'd be a good deal?
Yes.
Okay, how many of you guys would like to know that word? Anybody? Would anybody in here like to know it? Boy, not enough of you wanted to know it. Okay, forget it. No, no. No, no. Nobody wanted to know it? I'm not going to tell you then. We'll go ahead. If there's no enthusiasm, I can't give out that word. I guarantee.
Please do.
What's that?
Money.
Money? He's going to propose money. No, no, no. That won't work either. Tell you what we're going to do. We're going to go ahead and I'm going to give you some clues. I'm going to let you figure out that word because I think you can. If you can't figure out the word in a few minutes, I'll go ahead and give it to you. But let's go ahead and let's see if you can figure it out, all right? To do that, we need to look at the creation of the man and the woman. We'll look at that in Genesis chapter 2. Look there in Genesis chapter 2, verse 7, for the creation of the male. If you don't have a Bible, you have the little blue sheet there. 2:7 says, Then the Lord God formed man of dust from the ground, and he breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and the man became a living being. Now, that is the creation of the male, all right? Let's see what happened there. How many of you guys ever made a little sandman or a little mudman when you were kids at the beach or something like that? Okay, several of you did that. Okay, basically what you did, you go to the beach or something, and you take the little sand or the mud and the dirt, and you pack together to get a little body, right? And you pack together to get little legs, you pack together to get little arms, and you finally pack together to get a little head, all right? And you have a little mudman. Now, what I'd like to propose is that's exactly what God did. Isn't that what it says? He formed man of dust of the ground. And I don't think that's symbolic or anything else like that. That's exactly what he did. He formed man of dust from the ground. Now, he had a little fellow in the palm of his hand. Was the little fellow living at that time? No, he was basically just a little mud man, right? Now, I taught this once to a group of ladies several years ago, and I mentioned that, and one lady in the back, I mean, she went berserk. She was gone. You should have seen her. She looked at the Bible, and she said, That's it. I understand it. That explains it. I mean, she was gone. Now, after a while, I finally said, Excuse me, ma'am? She said, What? Looked up and said, What? I said, What's the deal? She said, Don't you see it? And I said, No, I don't. And she said, That's the first dirty old man, and they're all alike. I didn't appreciate it, but she got a point for being cute. And basically, that's what it was. And God, he says he blew the breath of life into the fellow, and he became a living being. Now, that is the creation of the male. Literally, that is it. Let's go ahead and look at the creation of the female. It starts off in 2:18. It says, Then the Lord God said, It is not good for the man to be alone. I will make him a helper suitable for him. And then two unusual verses. And out of the ground the Lord God formed every beast of the field and every bird of the sky and brought them to the man to see what he would call them. And whatever the man called a living creature, that was its name. And the man gave names to all the cattle and to the birds of the sky and every beast of the field. But for Adam there was not found a helper suitable for him. So the Lord God caused a deep sleep to fall upon the man, and he slept. Then God took one of his ribs, and he clothed with the flesh at that place. And the Lord God fashioned into a woman the rib which he had taken from the man, and he brought her to the man. And the man said, Wow, this is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of man. Okay, that is the creation of the woman, all right? Let's look at a couple of things before we actually get into the creation. Let me ask you a question. How many of you men out here feel that if you and I could ever have a one-on-one relationship with God, but that would be the highest goal we could ever hope for spiritually? How many would agree with that? Okay. I agree with that too. Guess what? God disagrees with all of us. Isn't that amazing? Let me ask you, did Adam have a one-on-one relationship with God? Could he see God? Could he talk with God? Could he interact with God? Yes. And in 2:18, I'd like you to look and see what God says about the situation. I think it's kind of amazing. What does it say? What does God say about that situation? It's not good. Isn't that amazing? That's his deal. It's not good. A one-on-one relationship. It's not good. It's not best. That's kind of interesting to me. Now, what did God do to make the situation good? What was his solution? He created a what? A woman. And you say, well, sure, what else could he do? I say he did have some options, actually. He didn't have to create a woman. He could have created a buddy. Seriously. Hunting buddy, fishing buddy, army buddy. He could have created a buddy. You know, there's going to be a difference between a woman and a buddy. No, he created a woman. And it's interesting, the presence of the woman made it right and made it good. That says a couple of things to me. Number one, it suggests to that maybe the woman's more important in God's plan than I've been thinking. And also it says to me that maybe she's more important than we've been treating her. Somehow her presence makes things right and good. Interesting. There's another thing, too. The next two verses after that, 19 and 20, have always bothered me. The next thing kind of interests me because the next two verses talk about creating the animals. Well, now, I'm a logical chap. And if God has said he's going to create the woman, then I propose to God, well, why don't you get on with it? Why do we have these two verses about the animals? However, I also understand that God does never waste any verses. Therefore, if those two verses are there, they have a purpose. And I had to think many years going for the purpose. I'll give you the purpose I've come up with. I don't know if it'll be satisfying to you. But let's see what that might be. The picture that we see there was that all the animals were brought by Adam. I think these were the warm-blooded animals, not the crickets. And each one that came by, Adam would name each one. He looked at one and say, oh, okay, this is what it does. And he would give it a name. He would describe it. But he was looking for one suitable for him. And each one, he said, that one's a very nice animal, but it's not quite right. And he would give it a name. Well, after all the animals had been brought by, I can imagine Adam would, you know, have to go to God and say, God, it's about the animals, God. They're very nice. I mean, I really enjoy them. But none of them quite hit me right. I mean, none of them turned me on. And God would be able to say, you know, Adam, I've been waiting for you to get to that point. Have I got a deal for you? I'll be back in just a while. And God disappeared for a little while. And he came back. When he did, he was leading the woman. We see Adam's response. He says, hey, this is good. He was pleased. He even gave her his name. You understand? Now, he took the woman. He disappeared for a little while, too. He was very excited about the whole thing. Now, that's the picture of what happened. But you know what? I think God has a sense of humor. I think he knew what was going to happen in a little while. He knew that in the centuries to come, there was going to be a little bit of friction between men and women. I don't know if any of you have seen any of that friction. Has anybody seen that friction between men and women in here? He knew it was going to be there. In fact, as he knew it was going to be with Adam and Eve, he knew in a few weeks, few months, Adam would be back one day and say, excuse me, God. God, it's about the woman. She's very nice, and I've been trying to work it out, but God, I don't think it's going to work. I mean, I think anything would work better than the woman, God. I think if you gave me the giraffe, I could work it out with the giraffe, you know? The hunting dog, anything but the woman. Now, what would God be able to say? He'd be able to say, Adam, yes, God. Adam, did you check them all out in advance? Yes, sir, I did. Did you tell me that none of them would do? Yes, I did. Did you tell me that the woman was just right? Yes, I did. God would say, good, she is. Get on with it. All right? Now, that's all that I can see there. That yes, there's going to be a lot of friction. And you and I have to realize that what we have is just right. And that could be useful for your own marriage, because sometimes with your own wife, it's just possible that it might cross your mind that you could work it out with a giraffe better than your wife. Well, what I'd like to propose is that you remember this. No. She's just right. She's just right, although it may not seem like it. We've checked them all out, and the one we have is just right. Okay, let's look at the creation of the woman, actually. We see down there in 21 that God had Adam put asleep, and then he opened his side and took a rib out, and he began to mold and fashion that into a woman, which is what I think he literally did, and until he made that into a woman. I don't know how he did it. I just think that's what he did. And then at the right time, he brought her to the man. All right? Now, that is the creation of the woman. All right? With that in mind, what I'd like to do is look at these two accounts and see what we can learn about men and women. I'd like to compare the two accounts. First of all, let's go ahead and look at the materials that were used. Let's look at the materials that were used. What was used to create the male? What did God use to create the male? It was dust. Or you can call that what? Dirt. Dirt. Now, gentlemen, I teach this to the ladies in the morning, and you should see them. They go crazy here. Dirt. I knew it all the time. He's dirt. I actually have to give them about 30 seconds to get this thing out of their system, you know. Dirt. I knew it all the time. He's dirt. You know, I let them say that. But, yeah, we're made out of dirt, as a matter of fact. And God is not bothered by that at all. He's not embarrassed by the fact that the male is made out of dirt. In fact, does anybody know what the name Adam means? A-D-A-M, our name. It means dirt. Isn't that amazing? It means red earth or dirt. So, gentlemen, our name is dirt. Now, what was the female made out of? She was made out of a rib. And can I call that living flesh? Is it reasonable to call a rib living flesh? Is it living?
Yes.
Sure. Does it have cells? Sure. Is it growing? Sure. Now let me ask, these two materials, dirt or living flesh, are they the same or are they different? They're different. How different are they? Just a little bit or a whole lot? A whole lot. In fact, it's in chemistry or whatever. A scientist would call this kind of material what kind of material? Inorganic material, and call this what? Organic. Inorganic means what? Having no what? No life whatsoever. And organic means having life. On this earth, can you be any more different than that? Can two substances be any more different than that? No, that's as different as you can be. All right? Let's go ahead then and look at the method that God used for creating the male and the female. He used two different Hebrew words for creating the man and the woman. The word in 2:7 for the man basically means that where he formed man or made man, basically it means you just get the parts, you slap them together to get a product, and you kick it out the end of the assembly line. All right? Not too complicated. You just want to get a product. You could translate that into the word manufactured if you liked. In the book of Isaiah, it is used about a blacksmith hammering out an object. All right? So you just get what you want. Now, what word was used for the woman in 2:22? It is fashioned in our Bibles. Fashioned, or you could use the word sculpted. Also in Isaiah, it is used for making something perfect in beauty. All right? Now, from what I'm describing so far, are these two words the same or are they different from what I'm describing so far? They're different. How different are they from what I'm saying? Just a little bit or a whole lot? A whole lot, all right? Let me give you an illustration that might show you how these words relate to one another. How many remember the fellow named Ian Fleming? Does anybody remember Ian Fleming? What was he famous for? He wrote the 007 or the James Bond series back in the 50s. All right, he became a very wealthy man, and Ian Fleming liked the very best things of life. He liked the best housing, the best cars, the best food, the best travel, everything. And he had enough money, he could do whatever he wanted. Now, he had a manor home outside of London, and quite often he'd have guests out there. And if he liked them, he'd say, "Look, would you like to see my automobile collection?" And they'd say, "Well, sure, Ian, we'd like to see anything that you have." So he'd take them out back, and across the courtyard would be his garage. Now, his garage was a little bit different than most of our garages. His garage had 7 doors on it. I mean, it was a big garage. All right? Now, he would take them across there, and he'd open the door, first door, and there might be a Maserati in there. And the guests would say, "Oh, Ian, look at that machine. The Italians, they know how to make a beast of a machine. Fantastic machine." And Ian would say, "It's a very nice car." And he'd open the next door, and there might be a Mercedes in there. And he'd say, "Oh, Ian, the Germans. The technology, the tolerances are so close, everything's such a fine craftsmanship, wonderful machine." And he'd say, "It's very nice." And he'd open the next door, and there might be a Rolls Royce in there. Say, "Oh, Ian, look at the luster of the paint. Look at the appointments inside. Oh, fantastic craftsmanship, wonderful automobile." He'd say, "That's very nice." And he'd keep opening the doors, and there'd be Jaguars in there and Porsches and on and on. And the people would go on and on. Well, they finally get to the 7th door. And, of course, they were kind of interested in this one. And he'd wait till it's just about right. The people are all excited about what's going to be in there. He'd lean down, and he'd lift up that door. And as soon as that door was up, the guests normally reacted the same way. What they normally did was take one step backwards, put their hands to their face, and they'd say something like, "Yuck! Oh, Ian, that's a gross thing! What do you have that gross thing in here for?" Now, what they were looking at was a 1956 Ford Thunderbird. And they would go on and say, "Oh, Ian, this gross American machine. The tolerances are so sloppy. The workmanship's so terrible. Oh, this is terrible. What do you have this thing in here for with all these other fine automobiles?" And Ian would say, "Oh, would you like to know why I have this car here?" And they said, "Yeah, we would, as a matter of fact." He said, "Well, I'll tell you." He said, "I've had the car for 2 years. And every year, every time that I've come out and put the key in the ignition and turn the key, do you know what happened? Does anybody know what happened?" He said, "It starts." He says, "None of the others do." He says, "This is the only one that works. The other ones I had to be fixing up all the time." So he says, "I have this one just for getting around in, all right?" Now, gentlemen, that Ford is an illustration of the word manufactured. Not too fancy, just designed to get the job done. All the other cars are illustrations of the word fashioned or sculpted. Very fine machines. They just had to be fixed up all the time. Now, what I'm going to be proposing to you is that God has basically designed you and I to be old Fords. I don't mean new Fords, I mean old Fords from the 50s. Some of you maybe are Ford tractors, I do not know. But basically, we're just designed to be old Fords. Not too fancy, we're just designed to get the job done, all right? Your wife has basically been designed to be a fine car, a Jaguar, a Rolls Royce, a Porsche. I don't know what model you have, you'll have to decide. But she's a fine car, all right? Now, there's a difference. If you want to go cross-country, I mean, if you really want to wing it and you really want to make it, do you take the old Ford or do you take the Jaguar? You take the Jaguar because when it's operating real good. Okay? That's what happens with these things over here. However, you have to have all sorts of pit stops to keep them going. All right? So when they're operating, they're good, but you got to fix them up all the time. Now, when you want to go cross-country hunting, do you take a Jaguar when you want to drive across-country? I mean, over the fields and up the mountains? No, you don't. They go about 300 yards, call off to a stop. You take the old Ford, no problem. I mean, you throw everything in there, your buddies get in there, and you could take right off the road and go across and up the mountain, right? Fenders fall off, bumpers fall off, no big deal. Nobody cared anyway, right? So, boom, it just keeps on going. Now, hopefully that'll give you an idea, basically, between these two words. And basically what I'm going to be proposing is that you and I basically are designed to be old Fords. Nothing too fancy. Your wife is designed to be a fine, crafted machine. Now, let me ask, from these two words, from what I'm telling you, are these two words the same or are they different?
Very different.
We got to my second question, yes. How different are they? Very, very different. All right, let's see how smart a group we have here. Has anybody yet figured out, I know I haven't given many clues, but has anybody yet figured out what the key word is between men and women? Oh, excellent group. Excellent. You all are intelligent. Different is the key word. You got that with hardly any clues, isn't that right? Men and women are different. Aren't you just awed with that knowledge? Well, gentlemen, I'm not dumb. I know what's going on. You're looking at me with your twinkle eyes. You're trying to be very courteous. But inside, you're thinking something like this. You're saying, you mean I gave up a night of TV? And I actually paid this guy money for him to come in and tell me that men and women are different. I knew that before I got here. I want my money back. Well, gentlemen, let me tell you. Yes, you've given up your dinner TV. You've paid your money. You're not getting it back. I have gum attached to all of it. You're not getting that back. And I'm going to tell you that men and women are different. I'm going to tell you it's going to be worth your time and money. You and I don't understand how different men and women are, and we're not living that way, and we're getting into a whole lot of trouble because we don't understand that one key word. Yes, men and women are different. You understand that one word and what it means, 200% better with ladies. Let's go ahead and see how that works out. There are also responsibilities that were given to the male and the female in the garden. Why don't you go ahead and give me those responsibilities? There were different ones that were given to the man and the woman. You might look from 215, you'll find one for the man. Till to cultivate or tend the garden. Now, the garden was their food supply. Therefore, what would he be responsible for being? For being the provider. For being the provider. Okay. That's a role, a responsibility that was given to the male. You're not going to find any verses in Genesis 2 or 3 where the woman is told to provide for the house or the home in any way. Okay, there's another one for the woman in 2:18. 2:18. What would that be? She was specifically created to be a helper, for sure. We know that. The female is designed to be a helper. A helper is one who does the support work so the worker can get out and do his work. In the history of mankind, that means that the woman has basically taken care of the food, the clothing, the housing, and the children and things like that. She's done all the support work so the man can get out and do his work. That's what a helper does. Now, she may work along with the man sometimes, in farming country sometimes, in harvest time. The gal has to get out there, jump on the tractor. No problem. No problem with that at all. However, she's not responsible for the harvest. The provider is responsible. That's what I want you to see. That's what a helper is. They do the support work so the other worker can get out and do his work. Okay, there's another responsibility for the woman or a role for the woman in 2:18. Well, what is it? She also not only designed to be a helper, but what else?
Company.
What's that?
Company.
Company. That's right. She was designed to be a companion. A helper suitable or a companion. Now, what I want to suggest to you, we've got to stop here just a second because we've got to look at this. This companion is very important. God has designed females to want to be a companion with her husband. I'm going to propose something to you very, very strong, and that is that a woman wants more than anything in the world to enjoy a companionship relationship with her husband or future husband. However, this is what women least often get to enjoy. Now, did you hear that? I better say that again. I am proposing to you that God has put into the woman an instinct. Her greatest desire is to enjoy a companionship relationship with a husband. And yet that is what women least often, even married women, least often ever get to enjoy. Now, if that is true, is that sad? That the thing that a person wants more than anything in the world is the thing that they are most often denied. Is that sad if that's true?
Yes.
Yeah. And guess what? It's true. Very few women get to enjoy a companionship relationship with their husband. Let's see why. First of all, we need to understand, now we can understand the difference between a woman and a buddy. A buddy is somebody you just knock through life with. You have good times, you have bad times, but as the years go on, they all become great memories. But you don't necessarily get into one another's life very deeply. A companion is something tremendously different. A companion is somebody who knows you. They know your hopes. They know your dreams. They know your fears. They know your doubts. They know your successes. And they know your failures. And they're still bonded to you. Now, is that different than a buddy?
Yes.
someone who knows you that well and is bonded to you. Is that different? I propose it's a whole lot different. Buddy just knocked your life with. And gentlemen, that's what I'm going to propose that a woman is designed to be. However, very few women get to enjoy that, and I know why, and you do too. Because to develop a companionship relationship, it is important, it is necessary for both parties to do something with one another, and it's very difficult for the male to do this thing. Does anybody know what it might be? To communicate. Right. To share who you are. To develop a companionship relationship, you have to share who you are. The two parties must communicate. And it's very difficult for males to do this. Let me ask in here, how many of you men know that you communicate less than best? Let's have a show of hands. How many of you men in here know that you... Okay. I'm really impressed with that. You know, seminar after seminar, I have about 85% of the men raise their hands. I'm pleased that we're dealing in reality. All right? So, yeah, I'm the teacher. I believe in all this stuff with all my heart. It is not natural for me to communicate. I have a tough time communicating. I do communicate now. I do it. It's a little bit mechanical. I mean, I just do it as an act of will. My way of communicating is if I have a thought that goes through my mind and I think that my wife should know it, I say, oh, thought, open mouth, speak. Wife, I have a thought. This is my thought. Now, gentlemen, that's not too smooth, is it? But it counts. You understand that counts. Let me also tell you where I found out about how to communicate, too. I only found out about 5-6 years ago. It was at a marriage encounter weekend. How many of you have ever been to a marriage encounter weekend? Did you find it useful at all? I found it very useful. I would recommend that as the best ministry anywhere in the nation to learn how to communicate for a male. If you want to go on one, I'd recommend that you go if you desire to communicate. It's called a weekend or a retreat. Forget that. It's work. It's miserable. It's a miserable 3 days, all right? Because it's work, but it works. If you want to learn how to communicate, they will show you how to do it. So I highly recommend a marriage encounter. I don't care who puts it on, whether it's Catholics, Episcopalians, whatever the case may be, Lutherans. The doctrine is, there's no doctrine in it. That's not the issue whatsoever. I think I went to a Lutheran one. It's just not an issue at all. But the process that you go through is very important. I'd really recommend, gentlemen, if you want to communicate, ever you want to communicate, go to a marriage encounter weekend. They're very, very good. All right? They don't help everybody, but they're pretty good. Okay, but let me show you. I have a tough time communicating, and it's in little ways. I see it sometimes when I'm just going out to the garage. I'm going to go somewhere to the store and pick up something. Simple deal. 15, 20 minutes, drive out to the store and come back. Right? No big deal. I see it sometimes. I go out, put my hand on the doorknob to go out to the garage, and a little voice inside of me says, "Ah, your wife would like to know that you're going to the store." Guess what I answer back to the little voice? I don't care if my wife wants to know I'm going to the store. The little voice says, but you should tell your wife you're going to the store. Well, I'm not going to tell my wife I'm going to the store. But she needs to know that you're going to the store. I don't care if she needs to know. She's a big girl. I'm a big boy. I don't have to tell her I'm going to the store. Tell her you're going to the store. No, I won't tell her I'm going to the store. Tell her. No. Tell her. No. Tell her. All right, I'll tell her. Now, can anybody identify with that foolishness? Isn't that dumb? My hand's still on the doorknob, and I still haven't figured out who the little voice is, you know, but I'm having this argument. But sometimes I've done it. I said, wife, yes, go to the store. There, I've done it, right? I never get away with that. One word destroys everything. Why? Hand is still on the doorknob. What do you mean, why? I don't have to tell her why. You should tell her why. I'm not going to tell her why. Tell her why. Do you all get the point? Is that weird? Is that weird? Gentlemen, that's weird, but guess what? That's the way we are. Also, let me mention, if you have a problem with communicating, I have some good news for you, and I have some bad news for you. If you have a problem communicating, the good news is, and I think this is good, you are not weird. You are normal. I think that's pretty good news. If you have a tough time communicating, you are a normal male. I think a lot of you thought you were factory rejects or something like that. You're not. You're just normal. That's the good news. The bad news is, it's not allowed. The bad news is, you are responsible to learn how to communicate. All right? And that's tough. That can really twist us. Okay. Well, no matter what. Do you get the idea? A woman is responsible to be a companion. Okay. What's another role or responsibility for men or women? You might look, let me ask, when the serpent came and attacked the family, who did he avoid? He avoided the man. However, look at 3:17. Guess who God held accountable? In 3:17, And to Adam, God said, because you have listened to the voice of your wife and done these things, all these curses are going to happen. It's interesting. Who did he hold accountable?
The man.
The man. Why? Because the man was responsible to be the what? He was supposed to have been the protector. The protector. You and I are responsible to be the protector. Okay? Okay, there's another role for the man. At the last line of 3:16. The last line of 3:16. What is it? The man is responsible to what? To rule over whom? Over the woman or the wife. Is that very popular in our society?
No.
That concept? No. Is our society actively hostile to that concept?
Yes.
Yes. Is that verse very clear in what it's saying?
Yes.
Yes. It's not, or is it one of those verses where you say, well, that's just up to your interpretation? I mean, there are verses like that, but is this one of them? This isn't one of them. It couldn't say it more clearly, all right? So, gentlemen, what I'm going to say is you're going to have to make a choice. You're either going to live the way Scripture says, which is you are responsible to be the leader, or you're going to live the way society says, which is anybody can lead, or as many leaders as you want. But you can't mix it. It's going to be one way or the other. That's what I'm going to say. And Scripture says the male is responsible to be the leader. Also, let me change that word rule from rule to lead or guide. To lead or guide. Because in English, the word rule has come to mean a tight-fisted dominance. And that has nothing to do with what God is going to hold us accountable for. God is going to hold us accountable to be the leader or the guide. And tomorrow night, we'll spend 3 hours on learning what those two words mean. And I think you'll be absolutely awestruck. I think you'll be excited, too, when you find out what that means. It does not mean a tight-fisted dominance in any way. It's really, really exciting. But I won't give you a preview of that. So you and I are responsible to be the leader or guide. That's another role or responsibility for the man. What's the most obvious responsibility for a woman in the world? For women in the world, what's their most obvious responsibility? To give children, to give life, have children. And also, while it's not mentioned, is it fair for me to also say that they are responsible to nurture this life? That's included there, isn't it? Even though it doesn't say it. A woman has a desire to nurture. She doesn't just have a baby stick it in a tree and say, goodbye, baby, hope you make it. I mean, there's a nurturing bond there. Would you agree? It's right there. Okay, there's one last responsibility for the male. In 2:17, who was that important spiritual commandment given to? Thou shalt not eat of this tree. Who was that given to? It was given to the male. Where was the woman at the time? She wasn't even created. Therefore, what was he responsible to do with her in that important spiritual commandment? He was supposed to do what? Supposed to teach her. What I'm going to propose is that you and I are responsible to be the spiritual teacher. Now, that's backed up very clearly by verses in the New Testament, and we'll look at them tomorrow night. But yes, another responsibility for you and I is to be the spiritual teacher. There's one last responsibility for the lady. I don't think you'll get it, so I'm just going to give it to you. I'm going to propose that God has designed her basically to create beauty. To create beauty. Now, you might say to me, now, wait a minute, where'd you get that one? I'll buy the rest. They seem to be there. But create beauty is not in Genesis 2 or 3. And I'm going to say, oh, I think it's there. Let's look at it in 3:16. To the woman God said, I will greatly multiply your pain in childbirth. In pain you shall bring forth children, yet your desire shall be for your husband. Okay, let's see what's happening. God came to the woman and said, look, this is the deal. Every time you have a child, it's going to hurt a lot. I mean, there's going to be a lot of pain. I mean, every time you have a child, it's going to be excruciatingly painful. Isn't that what he was saying in there in so many words? All right, that's what he was saying. Now, the woman is not dumb. She's got a brain. And if God tells her that every time she has a child, it's going to be excruciatingly painful, what's going to be her first thought? No kids. What's going to be her second thought? And nothing that leads to kids. Would you agree? And I would propose to you that unconsciously she would begin to pull away from her husband physically. How many would you agree with that? That would go through her mind. Well, God knew that too, that she would unconsciously begin to pull away from him physically. Therefore, he took care of it right here in this verse. What did he do? He said, yet what? Yet your desire shall be for your husband. What I'm proposing is that he's saying, yet I'm going to put into you a desire to have a physical relationship with your husband. Do you understand? So that's what I'm saying. Does that interpretation seem to make sense to you? That seems to be reasonable. That's one of those verses that is not so clear. Also, let me just warn you, there are very important teachers in this nation who have a tremendously different interpretation of that particular verse, what I'm teaching you. I'm not going to tell you what their interpretation is because I don't think it's true. But I don't want you to be startled if you come up with a great teacher who has a very strong opinion of that verse. I think this is it. And also this word desire is used in Song of Solomon 4:10, talking about a woman having a physical desire for a man. So I want you to see it as backed up. All right? What I'm proposing is that God put into the psyche of every female that's born, a desire to have a physical relationship with her future husband. That's what I'm proposing. All right? If that's the case, if God really has put into a woman an instinct to be with a husband, then How do women work that instinct out? What do they do to try to accomplish that goal? They have a tremendous desire to be with their husband, to be with a future husband. What do? To try and work out this inner instinct. They would? Yeah, they try and make themselves look good. They try to become attractive. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's just an unconscious instinct. And it begins to explain why they fix up their face, why they work with their hair to make it look as good as they can, why they wear the best clothes they can afford, and why they fix up their home. All they're doing is right here from 3:16, and it's just an inner instinct they're trying to become attractive. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's there. It's very important. Now, with that in mind, I need to mention something. That's kind of sad, because we really do a number on the ladies here. We really do them in. If they really had this instinct like I'm proposing, let me show you what we do to them. I'm proposing that beauty is crucial to them. Let's see the first thing that we do. How many of you have ever been getting ready to go out, and you're all ready, and your wife is still fixing yourself up? What do we say to her?
Hurry up.
Hurry up. Hurry up. And how many have ever gotten to the point, hey, it's not important, just move it. Anybody ever said that? Uh-oh, gentlemen. If this is true, guess what? It's not important to you. Guess what? It is important to her. It's crucial. She can't just move it like you and I can. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Well, it's inner.
Take 2 hours inside.
He says, what if they take 2 hours? We'll pick that up on Saturday morning. I got it all covered. It's all covered. You got good questions. Wrong timing. Okay, that's the first thing. Do you see the tension that we have there? Because we don't understand what's going on in there. Let's try another one, though. There's a worse one we do. The woman goes out and she finds some beautiful thing for her house. She buys it. She's so excited. She comes home. She finds it. She says, look at the beautiful thing I got for our home. Uh-oh. What's the first thing we say, gentlemen? You paid how much for that thing? And her little eyes fall, you understand? She never thought of price. I mean, that's the provider's problem. She never thought of that. You understand what I'm saying? And her eyes fall and she's hurt. I mean, it was important to her to bring this beauty home to her home. You understand what I'm saying? We really, really cut them down. Let's try a third one. She's sitting there taking care of herself, doing the best she can, getting ready to go out, and we come out and say, you are so self-centered. You are vain and selfish. We really put them on a guilt trip. I don't know if any of you have recognized that in your life. Well, the woman sits there and keeps taking care of herself. She says, gee, I am spending a lot of time on myself. I really am taking a lot of attention, but I don't feel selfish. I don't feel self-centered. Guess what I'm saying? She's not selfish, nor is she self-centered. She's just a what? She's a woman. Gentlemen, I've got to propose something to you. That if you ever get your woman to where she doesn't care about beauty anymore, guess what? Anybody want to know what the bottom line is? You've ruined a woman. That's really, really sad. And see what I'm talking about? We do many things to crush them in this area. Because we're just acting like a man. But we don't understand. I just got to caution you on this. We really, really crush people on this. All right? Big deal. Okay, well, no matter what. How many of you now would agree that at least these responsibilities seem to be there? Do these 8 responsibilities, roles seem to be there? They seem to be pretty clear, don't they? Now let me ask, how many of the male responsibilities are good? To be a provider, a protector, a leader, and a guide, and a spiritual teacher. How many of those are good? They're all good. How about the females? To be a helper, a companion, to give life and nurture it and create beauty. How many of those are good? They're all good. How many of ours are necessary for life to function well? All of them. How many of the ladies are necessary for life to function well? I'd say all of them. Now let me ask, these responsibilities, are they the same or are they different?
Different.
They're different. How different are they? Just a little bit or a whole lot?
A whole lot.
A whole lot. Do you understand? Can you even compare them? No, they don't even overlap. They're just totally what? Totally different. Now let me ask, does this word seem to be making a little bit more sense now? Seems to be more literal or maybe more important than you thought. However, if I drop this right now, I know what would happen with you. Later on, you'd be going out and getting in your car, driving home. You might say something like this. You might say, wait a minute. That sounded pretty good in class. But maybe that guy's just a swift teacher. Maybe he just knows how to take the Bible and twist it to prove whatever he wants to prove. He wants to prove the men and women are different. He knows how to do that. Maybe that's not really practical in 1986. Well, I better handle that right now because it is practical. And I want to show that this comes right over into 1986. To do that, you can help me. Because what I'd like to do is go ahead in the next page and look at characteristics that men and women are operating with right now. And you're going to find out that they're extremely predictable and they have everything to do with the way we've been created. To find out about those characteristics, we can go ahead and come up with words. I'd like to come up with words that when we say a word, you know, if we come up with a word, everybody say, oh, yeah, that's men. That's how men operate. Or another word, say, oh, yeah, that's women. All right? Let me start you off. I'll give you a word. When I say strong, strength, Who do we think about? We think of men. Males are strong or tough. Okay, gentlemen, let's get the wrong answer out of the way for the women. If we are strong, what are they? Give me the wrong. Weak, thank you. Is that a positive or negative word? It's a negative word. Something interesting, there are not going to be any negative words in either column. It's very interesting. They are less physically strong, got that. But it's not that they are not strong or tough. What are they? They're what?
Tender.
Or gentle. Okay? There's a difference here. Now, let's see. Why does a male need to be strong? A male needs physical strength for these certain of these roles up here. Which is the first role that he needs physical strength for? To be that provider. To work in this world, in the last couple of decades, we've gotten into a lot of desk working, and so we don't do this. But normally in this world, how do you earn a living? You have to dig. You have to chop. You have to carry. You have to build. You have to sweat. You understand? And you have to use your body. And God has given the male a very strong physical body, a very durable body, to be able to be the provider. All right? Also to be the protector. He has to be very, very tough. Isn't that right? And that's not too hard to see. You know, with a guy, you know, you hit a guy like that, what does a guy normally do? You know, if he's young, feeling his oats, he'll say, hey, that felt good. I like that. Let me hit you, and you hit me too. Oh, that's a good game, you know? I mean, there's a certain, you know, desirability about that. It drives women bats. They don't understand that. You weird man, you know. But anyway, yeah, we're just tough because we are a protector. Do you understand? We don't mind the bashing. Now, why do women need to be tender or gentle? Which role specifically? To be that nurturer to be that mother. That's right. It's very important that they know how to care for children. It's very natural. Let me show you how that works out. Let me ask, how many of you think that life would be different for babies if all of a sudden they had their diapers changed only by fathers? Anybody think it'd be a little bit different?
Yes.
Let's go ahead and look at that. Let's go ahead. That's right. A lot of rashes, as a matter of fact. But let's say the daddy did change it. Let's say the baby's been left home with the daddy. He's just learning how to walk, toddling around the house, having a great time. He's excited. All of a sudden, he stumbles into his father's airspace. All right? What does a father do normally? He says, stinks. Now, that is a male way of evaluating that situation, wouldn't you say? And he'd say, got to change diaper. Okay, now, does he tell the baby what he's going to be doing? Normally not. A male doesn't think about that. He thinks, change diaper. So the baby's walking 1 minute, the next minute, whoosh, boom, he's flying through the air. Nobody said anything to him. But before he has a chance to worry about that, bam, right in his back in the changer, right? But before he has a chance to worry about that, kavoom, I mean the diaper's gone, right? And the baby, whoo, where'd that go, you know? But before he has a chance to worry about that, the dad's in the next step. You know, clean it up. And the baby, whoo, whoo, that hurts, dad, you know? But the dad's in the next step already. Got to use the powder, you know? Grabs the Johnson with one hand, bam, hits it with the other hand. Does it work? Yep, all over the bottom, up the chest, the nose, the eyes, everything else. New diaper thrown in there, pants, bam, in the side, boom, on the floor. Let me ask, has the diaper been changed? The diaper's been changed in a male sort of way. Is that the way a woman would change a diaper?
No.
No, I don't think so. Let's look at that. Let's say she's walking along and the little baby toddles into her airspace. What would she say? Something like look down and say, oh, diaper do a little bit bad. And the baby would look up and say, are you saying you love me? You know, it sounds so nice, you know. And the mother would say, got to change diaper, do, you know, and takes them over the changer. Frankly, I have noticed that women can make changing a diaper an experience. Now, do you have to teach a woman how to do that?
No.
Do you have to send them to diaper changing school?
Natural.
No, it's just natural. God has put it in them. You understand? It's just God has put it in them to meet that role. All right? Let's go ahead and look at another characteristic. Let me ask, how do men and women think? Is there a difference in the way men and women think?
Yes.
Sure. How do we think, gentlemen? Logically. Excellent. Excellent. Okay, gentlemen, why don't you go ahead and give me the wrong answer for the ladies. If we think logically, how do they think? Illogically, you have to get it out of your system, so I got to let you say it. Is that positive or negative?
Negative.
So what's the correct word? They don't think logically, they think what? Emotionally. Thank you. Emotionally. That's not hard to see. How many of you have ever been on a committee with men and women mixed? Anybody? How many would like to never be on a committee again with men and women mixed? Don't feel too bad. They don't want to be there with us either, all right? Drives them nuts. Let's see how that works out. Yeah, there's a difference. What do men do? You sit down in the committee meeting, what do the men do? Say, okay, give me all the facts. You know, everybody, okay, they talk about it for a little while. Oh, okay, that's what we'll do. We'll do A, B, C, we'll get D, that's it, meeting's over, let's go home, right? And begin shuffling the paper and leaving, right? Now, they're going to have to leave. Does the woman get up? Ooh. The man says, excuse me, ma'am, meeting's over.
I don't think so.
Yeah, ma'am, we're going to do A, B, C, and we'll get D.
I don't think it'll work.
Oh, why, ma'am?
Well, I don't know. I think if you do it that way, I think Sally will be hurt.
Sally will be hurt. Who cares about Sally? Lady, that's the way we're going to do it.
I don't think you ought to do it.
Lady, give me one logical reason why we shouldn't do that. Well, I don't know. I just have a feeling you shouldn't do it that way. Now, what do most men do? They kind of look at each other and go, and they go ahead and bowl their way through, and they do just what they're going to do. They do A, B, C, kind of find out Sally is hurt, kind of find out Sally's uncle owns the company, and they're all fired. Now, did the woman of the committee know all that stuff? No, I don't think necessarily she did, but she had this feeling about what was going on, all right? So I think you can see how it works out. Now, why do women need to have this emotional insight? For which roles? Wants to be the mother again. They've got to be able to pick up on vibrations. I've seen that in my own home with four children. Quite often I'll be talking with my wife in the living room when the children come home from school. My wife will just be sitting there all of a sudden, she'll say, uh-oh, number two's hurting. So what do you mean? I mean, talk with number two. Two's not hurting. Two's hurting. I'll show you. Come here, number two. Tell your mom how great you're doing. Oh, Dad, as you know, I'm just doing terrible. It's all. I don't know how they do that, but they do it. Okay. They need that for being a nurturer. Also, what other area do they need to have this emotional insight? You have to be the companion. How many have figured out that the male has a very fragile ego? Gentlemen, nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. But they have an emotional insight. Also, remember, we don't talk too well. You know, mummy mouth. Well, they've been given emotional insight so they can figure out what's going on. They're able to fill in emotional blanks. All right? And then that helps them out. It'd be easier to... I'm recommending that you open your mouth and speak. But if you don't do that, then God has given the ability to figure out what you're thinking. Okay. Now... Yes. It'd be nice if we talked. But anyway, why do we need logical thinking for which of our roles? Wants to be the provider. Very, very important. What does a provider have to do? A provider has to look 3 and 4 years in advance, don't they? Say, hey, that's what I got to accomplish. And what does he say? To get to that goal, what do I have to do? Step, 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 step. Isn't that the way we normally think? Just natural to us. Are we worried about what's going to happen to people or what they think about our steps or feel about our steps? No, we really don't care, do we? We just come up with what we've got, all right? Now, what other role do we need logical thinking? To be the leader or the guide. Very, very crucial. We've got to be able to just take facts and make decisions, don't we? And we can do that. A male can do that. Are we bothered by what people feel about our decisions? Quite often we're not, all right? And quite often that's important. Also, I'm going to propose there's one other reason for us to have logical thinking, and that is for the spiritual teacher, all right? I'm going to propose that as a male, you're going to be held accountable for teaching God's Word. And God, this is written in what fashion? It's been written how? Very logically. In a very logical fashion. You've been given a mind that can most readily understand this because you're going to be held accountable for being a teacher. I've seen this quite often when I've had women come into my office and say, oh, Pastor, I have a problem. I say, what's your problem? They say, well, it's my husband. If he ever accepts Christ or ever gets turned on, he'll just never catch up to me spiritually. I say, oh, really? She says, yes, I just know too much. And I say, well, lady, let me tell you something. If your husband ever accepts Christ or ever gets turned on spiritually, he will probably surpass you in Bible knowledge within 12 months. And normally they say, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't know what tapes I listen to. I mean, you know, there's no way that could happen. And they go huffing out of the office and everything, you know. I've had many of those ladies come in years later. Sometimes I'll be sitting there and all of a sudden the door will bang open and say, they'll come running and say, oh, Pastor, it was just terrible. You know what my husband did to me last night? I said, I don't know. Did he beat you or what? No, he's only been a Christian 3 months. And last night he taught me something. It was awful, just awful. And they're startled because, you know, they've been working for years to learn things. And this guy picks it up. Now, you know, I say, hey, you've been praying for that on Wednesdays for years. What are you upset about? But anyway, the point is, the male mind can most readily pick this up. Now, am I saying that women can't understand this? I am not. I'm saying they have a different insight, though. It's a different way. I've seen this quite often when I'm teaching a mixed group of men and women. Quite often I say, we're going to be looking at this particular passage. And the woman will say, oh, it's my favorite passage. I say, oh, really, lady? What do you think it means? And she said, well, I think it means this, 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 and this. And I think, wow. I say, wow, where'd you get all that, lady? And she'll say, I don't know, it just feels right. I say, feels right? It took me 4 years of seminary to learn all that. It just feels right? I don't know how they do it, but they have this insight. You understand what I'm saying? But you and I are most able to analyze the Bible, tear it apart, and be able to transfer it, because God is going to hold you accountable to be the spiritual teacher. All right? Now, I do need to mention something right here that's very, very important.
And that is that in this area, quite often a man can be logically and technically correct. However, there's something missing in his teaching. It makes it all worthless. And the man doesn't know it's missing. Most men don't know it's missing. It's especially important with us pastors, as the case may be, or any leader. What can be teaching? A man can be logically and technically correct, but something very crucial is missing. It is love. And the man doesn't pick that up, see? If it's to you and I, if something is logically correct, guess what? That's enough for us normally. Guess what for a woman? It's not enough. She can't accept it. This is quite often what happens with us pastors. A couple can go to a church, and a man can say, "This is great," and the woman say, "I don't like it." And the man can say, "Oh, you got to. The doctrine's excellent." And guess what? Quite often the doctrine is excellent. Guess what the woman's picking up? She's picking up vibrations. No love. We men don't understand what's going on. Let me show you how that works out. Unfortunately, I had to learn about that in my own life by practice. One time I was the pastor of a church that was an hour away from our home. And so each Sunday we would spend an hour driving and coming back to and from. My wife kind of enjoyed that for building a companionship relationship, which meant we talked back and forth. Now, I didn't mind that, frankly. But one time during that, while I was at that church, I decided I would begin teaching on a particular doctrine. Now, it was a doctrine that was very important. It's a doctrine that has divided the church for 2,000 years. It is a doctrine that's going to continue to divide the church until Jesus comes back and explains which side is correct. Frankly, it's one of those doctrines you just got to decide which side you're on and hit it, all right? Well, I decided which side I was on, and I hit it. And I decided that I would begin teaching this to the church. And so I began studying and working up my outlines, getting ready. And I'll have to admit, I'll confess to you, I thought I was doing a rather good job of preparing. In fact, it did cross my mind that I might be the first man in 2,000 years that would solve it. But anyway, I worked with that, and I got my outlines all right, and then I began teaching to the church. And gentlemen, I thought I was doing a rather good job. Well, after the third week of teaching, we were driving home, and my wife was unusually quiet. I assumed she was just overwhelmed with the whole thing. And I figured as soon as she got her breath, she would begin talking to me. So it didn't bother me because I was going over my mind. It didn't bother me. I was just talking. Oh, that's great. Yeah, that's an excellent point there. Fantastic, you know. Well, about 20 minutes into the trip, my wife said, David. I said, oh, good, here it comes. I said, yes. And she said, David, I've made a decision. I said, yes, what's that? She said, I'm not going to go to your church anymore. I said, excuse me, could you explain why? And she said, oh, yes, no problem. She said, you know the doctrine you're teaching? I said, yes, I do. And she said, I think it's an important doctrine. And I said, I do too. And she said, I think you're teaching it rather well. I said, well, I'm doing what I can, of course. And she said, but you're teaching in anger. And she said, I don't want to go to a church where the pastor teaches in anger, so I'm not going to go to your church anymore. And by the tone of her voice, I realized that she wasn't kidding. And gentlemen, it's very bad for a pastor to not have his wife go to his own church. So I said, excuse me, could you give me a couple of weeks to work on this? And she had to think. Okay, yes, I can do that. Now, I went back to my study and I analyzed my outlines. And guess what? They were excellent. I still think they're excellent. I think that logically they make a lot of sense, all right? However, guess what spirit I found woven throughout my teaching? Anybody want to guess? Anger. Oh, anger. Well, I had to do several things. Number one, I had to vow to God that I would cease teaching that doctrine immediately, which I did. Number two, I had to vow to God that I would not teach that doctrine until I could teach it in love, which took 2 years. Then finally, I had to go out to that church and tell people go to certain homes and tell them what I'd been doing, which was using God's word to nail them to the wall just because I was mad. And then they asked them to forgive me, which they did. They were startled. Then I had to go to my wife and ask if she would please continue going to my church, which she said she would. I was very thankful. Okay, all that's to say, gentlemen, watch out. Quite often, you can be logically and technically correct, but guess what? No love. And guess what? It's not good enough. Isn't that amazing? So you might think about that. Okay, let's go ahead. Let's look at another one. What about risk? Is there a difference in the way men and women view risk? Is there a predictable difference in the way women... What do men think about risk? Go for it. Yeah. I mean, we would agree that basically a man's very aggressive toward risk. Would you agree with that? Do women like risk? No way. What's the one word that they want? Security. Anybody ever had a problem with that in your home? When you go for risk, it's very, very predictable. But now let's see, why does a woman need to be so interested in security? She's very interested in security. Why? For which roles does she have to care about security in a stable environment? One is being that mother. She wants a stable environment for her loved ones. Do you understand? She doesn't want to be moving all the time. She wants stability for her loved ones. Also, what about being the helper? She wants to know where things are, where she can get things for her loved ones. She wants to know where she can find her tools. It's very important for a woman to have stability around her so she can find her tools. All right? Also, in creating beauty. It takes time to create beauty. Do you understand that? A woman doesn't just move into a house and just dwell there. What does she do? She weaves herself into the very being of that house. Do you understand? It takes time. She doesn't want to be moving all the time. It's crucial to her. She wants security and she wants stability. Nothing wrong with it because of that's her desires. Now, why does a man have to like risk? Men, most men like risk. Why? Which role specifically do you have to be a risk taker? To be the provider. You understand? To be a provider in this world, you have to be a risk taker. Let's look at a farmer. What does he do? He spends all his money on seed. Then what does he do with the seed? He buries it. Isn't that weird? Now, is he sad and lonely and depressed when he's planting a seed? No way. He's whistling and singing because where's the man's mind? It's not in the seed going in the ground. Where is it? It's thinking about the harvest. Likewise with a man who's investing his money. What does he do? To get more money, what does he have to do? He has to take all his money and do what with it? Bury it in a possibility. Can men do that? Sure. We're looking for things to do, right? Looking for places to throw our money into it. And quite often we'll say, there is a great opportunity. We're going to put all our money in there. Isn't that great, wife? What does the wife say? No, it's not great. Put it all in the bank. Keep it all in the bank. How many have ever had that situation? Anybody ever had that situation? You understand what I'm beginning to say? It's predictable. It's right. It's good. And the man quite often looks at the woman and says, what's with you, woman? Can't you see this is a great opportunity? Guess what I'm telling you? She can't see it. You understand what I'm saying? You can. It's very, very neat. I've seen this once. I had a 67-year-old gentleman who was getting ready to die. His body was wasting away, and so he was getting his estate in order. And I was helping him at the time in various ways. And I remember one night we were up late at night, around 11 o'clock or so. We were in the kitchen, the little night light on, not too much light. And the man was all crippled up and everything. And he said, David, come here. And I came over close to him because I couldn't talk very loud. I said, David, don't tell my wife, but I'm thinking about buying another company. I said, you're what? He said, oh, yeah, it's just too good a deal to pass up. Now, I almost got upset with him. But then I remembered he was just being a what? Just being a man, do you understand? It was okay. I'm thankful he didn't buy the company. But do you understand? It's just the way you are, gentlemen. When you no longer want to take a risk, I've got to tell you, you've got to be careful. You and I are natural risk takers. Okay? Also, in being aggressive, pushy. Why? What role do we need to be aggressive for? Pushy, shovy. To be that protector. You understand? We've got to be a risk taker, get out there and be shovy and pushy. Very, very important. That's not hard to see, that we are that way. Very aggressive. You know, if you hit a woman, if you bump a woman with your arm, what will happen to her? What will she do? She'll normally take several steps backward, won't she? And if worse gets to worse, she'll fall, which is terrible to ever see a woman degraded. However, if you bump a man with your elbow, what will he do? How many steps will he take? Normally, one step. For what purpose? Just to get his balance. And then which direction does he go? Wherever the bump came from. Kaboom, right? Now, do you have to teach a boy how to do that? You don't have to teach a boy. Gentlemen, God has put it into us. Do you understand what I'm saying? We're born with it because we have a role. We are a protector. It's very, very crucial. We are naturally pushy. Now, let's see how this works out in practicality. Do you have four-way stop signs here in the city?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, well, no, I'm going to tell you. I've tried this in Dallas. Don't do this in Dallas. Dallas-Fort Worth. I tried this. It doesn't work out. But in smaller towns, Dallas is changing everything. In smaller towns, if you have four-way stop signs, anything under 100,000 people, this will work out. You can try this out to see if this is really true. Because if you have a four-way stop sign, if you have two cars come up to the four-way stop sign at the same time, I can predict to you what's going to happen depending on who's driving the cars. Very easy. Because if you have two males come up to the four-way stop sign at the exact same time, what's going to happen? It's going to be a race for the center of the street. Both guys roar. I'm here for it. Roar. The wife's waiting for the impact and everything. Both guys, for 5 miles per second, I had to ride away, but he doesn't know how to drive. You know. Both cars are saying the same thing. Isn't that amazing? Now, let's say you have two cars going at the same time. One's driven by a man, the other driven by a woman. What will happen? Very predictable. Man, vroom, roar right through. What will the woman do? She'll just not hesitate. She'll wait. She'll just wait. Now, don't try this. I tried it over in Dallas the other day and almost got killed. But anyway, it didn't work out. But you get into a little smaller town, you just watch. The woman will wait. And let me tell you, what you can do is play a game to check out and see if I'm really actor in what I'm telling you here. I play a little game. What you do to play this game, if you come up and at the four-way stop sign and see a woman come up at the same time, you say, chance to play the game, what I do? You have to stop your car, and then you have to immediately take your hands off the steering wheel. You've got to grab your right thigh, and you've got to pull toward your chest and hold your leg up there. Does anybody know why you have to do that?
You run out of patience.
No, because your foot's going for the accelerator. You got to hold it up there until it quits spasming. Okay? As soon as it quits spasming, you slowly put it down the floorboard. And there's no problem. The game's still going on because what's the woman doing?
Waiting.
She's waiting. No problem. Okay. Now, what you do, you move into stage two. You look over at the woman and you say, "You first, lady." Isn't that nice? Guess what she'll do? "Oh, no. You first." No problem. No problem. You move into stage three. You say, "No, no, 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 no. You first." Guess what she'll do? "Oh, no, 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 no. You first." Now, gentlemen, personally, my male psyche's never allowed me to get past stage three. Really? By that time, I'm ready to get in my car, go rip her door off and say, "Lady, move your car, you know, move it." Now, let me ask, why is that woman waiting? She's not dumb, but she doesn't want to risk something. Does anybody know what it is she does not want to risk? Yeah, it is life, not the car. She doesn't care about the car. That's not crucial to a woman. That's the provider's problem. Seriously. Sure, she tried that. She didn't care about a car. She didn't want to risk life. Now, let's be careful. What's the first life she didn't want to risk? Be careful. Can anybody pick it out? Who would it be?
Children.
Her children. Her loved ones. Her children, her husband, her parents. It doesn't matter. Well, you understand what I'm saying? Her loved ones. It doesn't even matter if they're not in the car. Their ghosts are in the car. A woman always carries her loved ones around with her. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
What's the next life she doesn't want to risk? Whoever's over in the other car. Totally unimportant to her whether it's a man or a woman. What is it to her? It's a life. And I'm telling you, to a woman, that's the most important thing in the world, is life. Got to put it in there. Now, finally, what's the last life she don't want to risk if she ever thinks of this life? And I don't think they normally think of this life. Her own. I don't think she hardly ever gets around to that. You understand what I'm saying? You know, they're not dumb. They're fantastic. They're not selfish. No. Okay, are you getting the idea? Let's go ahead and look at another one. I'm going to propose to you that also men see the big picture.
Are you saying that it's okay then?
He's asking, am I saying that it's okay if you come to a four-way stop sign and the woman's waiting for you to go on? I'm saying, if you've got something to do, I would propose that you go on, yes. Okay? Okay. Let's go ahead. I just got to tell you, I was up in Oklahoma City one time coming out of a church parking lot. I'd been talking to them. And the car in front of me wasn't going. And I thought about this, and I looked at, it's a woman, no problem. And then I realized, I looked ahead, and what she was doing was waiting for a woman who wanted to make a left turn across traffic coming in. She was waiting for her. I thought, that's pretty serious. But then I looked to my left, and there was a woman in the right lane that was waiting for both the others so that they wouldn't get hurt. And so three cars had everything blocked up, and I thought, I may as well begin to read. I got nothing else to do. I mean, everybody was waiting for everybody. Okay. Now, what I'm going to propose to you is that also men basically see the big picture in life. Big picture, long term. What do women see? They see, as you said, the immediate. Right here, right now, details. Okay? That's not hard to see. Why do they need to do that? They need to see the immediate, of course, for creating beauty and nurturing life, on and on. We need to see the big picture for being the leader and the guide and the provider, and on and on and on. But let me show you how this works out. In practicality. Let's say the wife's walking around the house, telephone rings, she goes over and picks up the phone, and it's the husband, says, glad you're home, wife, you won't believe what I did today, quit my job, took all of our savings, bought the rights to this real neat product, but I don't have time to tell you about it right now, you'll love it, I'll be home in just a little while, click, and he hangs up.
Oh.
Apparently you know what's going to happen. Does that guy know what's going to happen to him when he gets home? Do we know what's going to happen to him when he gets home? Yeah, we know. What's he doing? Is he worried about it? No, he's whistling and singing in his car, because where's he thinking? He's thinking long term, you see? Do we know what's going to happen to him in just 15 minutes? He doesn't. Well, let's get him home.
Okay,
yeah.
He walks in the door. There's a wife sitting there waiting. He says, glad you're here. She's not going to be anywhere else. He said, let me tell you what I did. I quit my job, never did like that anyway. And I took all of our money and I bought the rights to this real neat product. Now, what we're going to have to do, we'll have to sell the house. We'll be broke for around, 3 or 4 years. But then we're going to make it really, really big. What do you think? How does the wife react? It's very predictable. What does she do?
Cries.
Thank you. You know women a little bit. She just cries. And most men are really startled. They take a step back and say, golly, she must not have heard me. Because it's so exciting to him. But then he makes a worse mistake. He says, I'll tell her again. Oh, he shouldn't do that. But he's so excited, he goes over and tells her the whole thing again. Now how does she respond? She not only continues crying, but now she begins to what? To speak. She begins to speak to him about his character, about his background, his ancestry, and everything about it. And it's not very positive. Now, most men, what they do, they take a step back. Their eyes get kind of squinty. They look at her and say, you know what? You never have supported me in life, have you? Anybody ever heard that? In your neighbor's home, of course. And the man turns and slams the door and goes to get mad somewhere. The woman slams the door and goes to cry somewhere. Very, very predictable picture. Would you agree? Because we're thinking about two different things. Let me show you what was going on there. That woman did not have a chance of responding well, because that man was ripping her up one side and down the other. She could not respond well. Let me show you what went through her mind automatically, unconsciously. She didn't even know what was happening. When he told her those things, her first thought was, she said, move? What do you mean move? The children are in school. We can't move right now. And I have doctor and dental appointments coming up that have been set up. I can't move right now. And also leave this neighborhood. I know where all the best stores are. I know how to provide best for my family. You understand what I'm saying? And also sell the home and be poor for a little while. That'll make us look terrible to our family and our friends. And also leave the home. What do you mean? It's taken me 5 years to get it looking as good as it is now. And the landscaping is just beginning to come in. Do you understand? This is all going through her mind unconsciously. She didn't even know what's happening. Now, which roles am I proposing she's reacting from? She's just reacting. What's the first role I was proposing she's reacting from? Being that nurturer, caring for life. What was the second role I proposed? Creating beauty. All right? Let me show you what a wise man would do in such a situation. A correct man would come in and say, hey, honey, I got something exciting to tell you. But before I tell you, let me tell you what I've done. I've left enough money in the bank to pay for a house payment for a year. I've also left enough money in the bank to pay for our food for 6 months. And I'm going to promise, if at all possible, we're not going to move. Now, can I tell you what I've done? Now how will she respond? She'll have two emotions. One will be fear, scared, but also there'll be what? There'll be excitement and curiosity. You understand? Because he's met which roles? He's met those first two roles. You understand? He's given her some security. Now she will have moved to which role? Now she's buying an idea. She's buying a dream. So which role will she have moved to? No, not the helper. The helper is hands-on. That's where you're helping. She's moving to the companion. You understand? If you give your woman half a chance and help her in her role, she'll back you like nobody else will. How many have ever seen a wife back a man when nobody else would? How many have ever seen that? How many have ever seen a wife back a man when nobody else should? Gentlemen, you give a woman half a chance and she'll back you like nobody else. But you see, quite often we tear them apart. We rip them apart because we just don't understand where they're coming from. And we lose our greatest supporter. You understand what I'm talking about? It's really sad because we don't understand this one word. Now, that's very, very important, and that's how it's operating. All right? You've got to give her a chance. Very, very important. Now, also, let me mention one other thing here before we go on. It's a little bit off the point a little bit, but I think it's important. Let me ask, if you come to a woman and do not give her time to think, but she has to make a decision right away, where she has to choose between serving you or serving the children, no time to think. She has to either serve you or serve the children. Who will she serve almost every single time?